Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, first wave, first chapter, verse 11, Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Namritam Anukalyena Krishnanu Shilam Bhakti Uttamam. Translation. The highest bhakti is defined as too long. The highest bhakti is defined as continuous service or emotions directed toward Krishna, his expansion forms, or others related to him, with a pleasing attitude towards Krishna. It should be devoid of desires other than desire to please the Lord, and unobstructed by impersonal jnana, the materialistic rituals of karma and other unfavorable acts. We're discussing the word anya bilashita shunyam, because the word abhilash means desire and anya means other. So anya abhilash means no other desire. So why is the suffix ta added to the word anya bilashita? This is very interesting, how deep this definition goes into the depths of our consciousness. Because in Sanskrit, Jiva Goswami is explaining, when you add the suffix ta, like smarta, we were talking the other day about smarta, means the quality or state of being of anything, its actual nature or sobhav, its inner nature. I'll give you an example of some, because it says anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyanavritam, that this is a covering, to be covered by jnana or karma, or to be covered by any other desire. I'll give you an example. A devotee, he's serving Krishna anywhere. We can say in ISKCON or out of ISKCON or anywhere. Some devotee serving Krishna for so many years, 10 years, 20 years, whatever. Then all of a sudden he disappears. And he goes and he becomes absorbed again in material activities. And someone may wonder, how is it possible? The person was seeming to be practicing bhakti so diligently and sincerely, and all of a sudden they disappear from the scene. It's because they appear to be exhibiting the quality of anya abhilash. They didn't have any other desires. They were serving. They had desire to serve and please Guru and Krishna, it appeared. But they weren't free from anya abhilashita. This is why he's saying this ta aspect refers to the inner nature. In other words, you can act in the field of bhakti and it appears that you're not exhibiting any desires, material desires, but in your heart, you actually are harboring so many desires. You're holding on. So on one level it looks like, oh, he's such a fixed up devotee, just serving day and night. But what is this actually? This ta aspect means his sobhav, his inner nature. What is he really made of? So this is what's so important. Because a devotee, he may have other desires. So many desires may be in our mind. But his inner tendency is, I just want to be Krishna's servant. So it's an interesting thing that one may be acting and exhibiting, oh, he appears to not have any desires, he's just serving. But his tendency, his actual sabhav is, I have a lot of desires and I'm an enjoyer. Because bhakti is all about changing our consciousness. Actually changing, we develop the consciousness, the actual consciousness and inner nature, what they say, sabhav, is that I am Krishna's servant and I only want to serve Krishna. Although so many desires may come into my mind, come or go, and I try to not act upon them as much as possible, but my actual nature is that I'm Sharanagati, that I'm surrendered to Krishna. And this type of devotee will never leave. This type of devotee will never leave Krishna. He'll never give up bhakti. He may have his ups and downs, he may have difficult times, but his actual sabhav is he's a devotee. Sometimes they have the phrase, you must have heard the phrase, he's a devotee at heart. Although he may be temporarily under the weather, as they say. But actually, his heart is that he actually. So this is what Rupa Goswami is trying to explain here. Anyabhilashita. It's actually the quality. It's desireness. In other words, really, we don't want to enjoy this world. A real devotee doesn't want to enjoy this world. He doesn't want to stray away from Krishna. And he'll never give up Krishna. He has that much conviction, attachment. But he may be pushed this way and that way, like a piece of straw in the ocean. One wave pushes it that way, and the other wave pushes it that way. But it still maintains its identity. I'm a piece of straw, and I'm in this ocean. So one material desire may push us this way or that way, but we don't give up bhakti. But oftentimes, because that quality is there, anyabhilashita. My basic nature is that I'm desireless. That I'm really this desireness, the tendency to desire separately from Krishna is actually eliminated in me. Although I may have so many desires. And someone else may be acting for 10 or 20 years in bhakti, but the tendency, the inner tendency, the inner nature to enjoy material things and enjoy the body or whatever has not been removed. That consciousness is still the same. So then when he goes out, when he leaves the association of devotees or the service of Krishna, you don't see any bhakti. You don't see any signs of bhakti in the person. They're totally absorbed. Because the whole thing was a show. It was practically a show, although they were making a good show, but they didn't change the core of their existence. So when they go back and you meet them, say, "What about your devotion?" "Oh, well, maybe later, but I have no interest now. I know I took initiation, I served for 20 years, but now I have no interest." So that means that person he was anya abhilash, but not anya abhilashita. The tendency to desire separately from Krishna. So it's not that if we're sincere devotees that we don't have any desires. We have so many desires, material desires. But what we have to see is, what is our nature? Is our nature changing? Is our actual inner nature? That's why it says swabhav. My own inner feelings. What do I really like? Oh, I'm doing this bhakti thing, and it's really me. But actually, in my heart, I'm something else. In my heart, so this is bhav, in your heart. So, you know, are we heart-to-heart actually a devotee? So it's a very, very penetrating definition. Because it's only two, it's only one syllable, ta. You know, but it has so much deep meaning. Because because it's all about consciousness. So this word ta, it includes a whole class of desire. When we say anyabhilashita, one should not, this is any means other, then abhilash means desire, then ta means a whole class. Any other desire but to serve Krishna. That should be my only desire is to serve Krishna. Although I have so many other desires I'm carrying with me due to my prarabdha, due to my previous activities. But the only desire I have that I really possess in the core of my heart is to serve Krishna. And such a person will never, even if he leaves the, you can say, close circle of devotees, if you go to see him, he will still say, "What are you doing?" "Oh, I'm still chanting, I'm still rising early," although he may be temporarily, sidetracked, but he won't give up everything, because in heart he couldn't keep the same standard that he was in association of devotees. But even if he leaves and it gets absorbed in material and fulfilling his material desires, still he'll carry on with bhakti. But you also see the example of people that don't do anything. They leave and they're completely they were drug pushers or whatever before they joined the fold. And they became sannyasis or whatever. And then after 20 years, they go back and again push drugs. And there's no sign or semblance or any kind of devotional activities in them at all. And we've seen many examples. It's not some imagination. It's clear, hard, straight fact. So this verse is reality. Anyabhilashita. So this is desireness, the quality of desiring. This differentiates desire from desireness. Abhilash only includes all desires. If Rupa Goswami only used the word abhilash, anya abhilash, one should have no other desires. Anya means other. So if only the word abhilash, that will only include all the desires that are related to material existence, which means integral, related to material existence. like the desire to survive, the desire to eat, the desire to evacuate, the desire to sleep. Extraneous desires like these, which are related to our material body, may be present in a devotee. So we may, that's why I said earlier, now I'm making specific, that devotee may have desires, but he's free from desire-ness, or the tendency to desire something other than Krishna. Although, yes, I desire to eat, but the soul doesn't really need to eat, you see, and the soul doesn't need to sleep. But I desire to eat, I desire to sleep, I have desire to evacuate or whatever, or so many material tastes. But, okay, this is going on, the body has these desires and I have to serve them, but actually I wish, my real desire is that I would never have to eat or sleep, and I would just serve Krishna day and night. But then we can ask ourselves, is this the type of desire we have? We say, no, I rather like eating and sleeping. And so then it goes on. This is written in this purport of Jiva Goswami. So he's saying, even though a desire, extraneous desires, means it's extraneous to the Atma. There's the Atma and the body. So all these desires, and practically every whole class is material desires, extraneous desires related to the material body, they may still be present in a devotee. And still, one is not out of the realm of pure devotional service. That's why we're saying that this definition of uttam bhakti applies in the category of sadhana, when we're not, you know, we're sadhakas, we're still in anartha nivritti, and it applies in the level of bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. But what happens is that as one progresses, he doesn't have extraneous desires, but he still has to act on them at the level of sadhana. He has to sleep. And as one goes further up to the level of bhava and prema, then these extraneous desires, he doesn't have to act on them. They're not there anymore. He's existing on the spiritual plane. So it's not that you're disqualified if we have some extraneous desires, but what is the actual the basis, the tendency? Is our tendency to serve Krishna, or is our tendency actually to enjoy? If the tendency is actually, the inner tendency in Svabhava is that I want to serve Krishna, and these things I'm just forced to move according to these desires, he's still not out of the range of pure devotional service, as long as they are not the main focus in life. This is what Jiva Goswami says. Some of these extraneous desires may be there for eating, evacuating, sleeping, or enjoyment, man, woman, whatever, husband, wife. But still, one can be practicing uttam bhakti as a sadhaka, even in the presence of these desires, as long as they aren't the main focus in one's life. As Prabhupada would often say, we should eat to live, not live to eat. So the desire to eat is necessary for physical survival. But if that becomes, so that you can still be in practicing pure devotional service and eat, take prasadam. But when your eating becomes the focus and not the service, then you're disqualified from pure devotional service. A devotee should be pure and simple in heart, not kapat or cheating, have a cheating heart. One's motive must be kept completely pure. Anya bilashita means the quality, sometimes we say the desire-ness, or the quality or tendency of desiring anything but Krishna. This is the example that Jiva Goswami cites of sometimes a devotee may have another desire besides serving Krishna, extraneous desire related to his body. This is an example of an occasional other desire, right? Anya means other. Abhilash means desire. But still, he's anya abhilashita. This devotee is anya abhilashita, but still he may have an anya abhilash. Occasional other desire. Sometimes, in a rare circumstance, a devotee's life is in danger or in sickness, and he may pray to Krishna. For example, someone is sadhaka, and he's practicing uttam bhakti, and he is actually exhibiting this quality of anya vilashita. But by chance, he goes for a japa walk in the forest, and he's simply chanting the holy name, trying to please Krishna by his chanting, and he's absorbing himself in the nam, rup, guna, and lila of Krishna. Hopefully, that would be nice. And he's walking there, and suddenly from the forest, a tiger appears. It's rawr! So, without even thinking, just automatically, he's, oh Krishna, 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 please help, please protect me, Krishna, please protect me. So, this is another desire besides the service of Krishna. Because asking Krishna to protect us is not service to Krishna. It's Krishna rendering service to us. So this may spontaneously happen, where we're in a, but this is a circumstantial. So although his tendency is never to ask Krishna for anything, always to do service, but he becomes, because of the circumstance, he becomes overwhelmed and he says, oh Krishna, please protect me. So this is the example that Jiva Goswami is saying, that this occasional departure or occasional expression, it says an occasional expression of an anya abhilash, of another desire, does not disqualify the devotee from being characterized as a practitioner of pure devotional service and meeting the criterion of uttam bhakti by having this quality of anya abhilashita. The other occasion may be someone's very sick. They're really sick and the disease going on, lingering for days, and then they say, oh Krishna, please, please cure this disease so I can serve you. But it's not that, so this is the example. He said, Krishna, in a circumstance a devotee's life is in danger or in sickness, he may pray to Krishna. Krishna, please protect me, please cure my disease. Such a prayer is not uttam bhakti. Because uttam bhakti, as we said, we defined it, is anukalyena Krishna, anushilanam and anukalyena Krishnanu. It's all for moment to moment, it's for the pleasure of Krishna. So asking Krishna to serve me is not for the pleasure of Krishna. So he says that such a prayer is not pure bhakti, but the action, because the action is not for the pleasure of Krishna. You are pleading and begging for your help, so this is not bhakti. But the acharyas don't classify this as anya abhilash, other desire, because it is really not the swabhav or the nature of the devotee. Because this ta word means, what is your actual swabhav? What is the core of your existence? The core is that I never want to disturb Krishna or ask Krishna for anything at any moment. I only want to serve him moment to moment. But somehow, due to circumstances, I was taken over. And this would be this is an example of a sadhaka who is actually practicing uttam bhakti, but there's still, because he is not on the level of bhava bhakti or prema, he still may, for example, if a bhava bhakta or a prema bhakta was walking in the forest and he saw a tiger, he said, oh Krishna, you've come in this form. Even they read in the biographies of some of the devotees, like Rasikananda and others, they will never disturb Krishna. In the story of, well, let's look at a story right at hand, at Radhakund, or rather Shyamakund. And Das Goswami was doing bhajan out in the open, in the sunshine. And it was a hot day, like some of the previous days. And he was oblivious, because he was just sitting near some bushes and meditating on the Astakali Leela of Radha and Krishna, and absorbed in Leela Smaran and his Swarupa Vesh as Rati Manjari. And he's entering another world. But, nevertheless, his body was existing in this world, and it was extremely hot, and all kinds of perspiration was coming out of his forehead and his body, and he was sweating. And at the rate he was sweating, he would become dehydrated and severely sick, or very sick if he continued that. So Radharani came and stood behind Das Goswami. I think everyone's seen the painting. And she held her arana, or her veil, over his head to shield him, or give him, to shade him from the sun rays. Consequently, he became relieved and cooled down, and Radharani started sweating profusely, and it was just dripping out of her body like rivers. And standing on the bank where he would often do bhajan near Madan Mohan temple, Sanatana Goswami looked across at Manasapavan Ghat, And he saw Das Goswami taking service from Radharani. And she is our, she is our Swamini. She's the object of our seva. So he met with Das Goswami and said, "This is not very good. Do you realize what happened?" He said, "I didn't realize." Because he was absorbed in his meditation. He says, "It's not very good to take service from Radharani." You know this, I think everyone knows the story. So he was completely oblivious. But the idea is that in Uttam Bhakti, the devotee never thinks of taking any service. Of course, he was not consciously doing it. But even unconsciously, it was going on. So he was somewhat chastised. He was actually chastised by Sanatana Goswami, because Sanatana Goswami was his guru. Rupa and Sanatana were the Shiksha gurus of Das Goswami. And he was under their shelter when he came to Vrindavan. So he was reprimanded, let's say mildly. But then again, either secondarily or primarily, firstly, again he was doing bhajan. And then this time two tigers came to drink water from Shyamakund. Husband and wife, I suppose, or whatever. And then they were drinking water, and then Krishna was very concerned. All my devotees absorbed in bhajan. And these tigers, they like too much to eat the devotees. So then Krishna came, and he manifested his Vishnu form there with a chakra in the hand, ready to kill the tigers if they would approach his pure devotee. So again, Sanatana Goswami was there, and he saw that. And then this time, he said, "Listen, now it's time for a bhajan kutir." So the Brijvasis, they, because they were very much attached to Sanatana Goswami, even after 500 years, they still remember Muriya Baba. Muriya means shaved head. Sanatana Goswami always had a shaved head when he moved around Braj. And so even when you read on the Hindi calendar, when it's Guru Purnima, it says Muriya Purnima, which is how much after 500 years. There's nowhere anywhere in India is this Purnima known as the full moon day that the bald-headed guy entered Samadhi. Because on that day, in Guru Purnima, that's the birthday of Vyasadeva, who's the guru for everyone, whether you're Vaishnava or Mayavadi or Dvaitin or whatever. But the Brijvasis had so much regard because they knew him. He was mixing with everyone and moving everywhere. He was the father. He was the spiritual father for Brajmandal. Bengali Baba. They're all Brijvasis. He's Bengali. Arupa and the other five Goswamis, they kept to themselves. They didn't really mix up, as we heard from the story in Chaitanya Charitamrita about Jagannanda Pandit, remember? Jagannanda Pandit wanted to go to Vrindavan, so Lord Chaitanya said, "Yes, keep a distance from all the Brijvasis, offer your respects, and stay tightly with Sanatana Goswami." Remember? And only stay a few days and come back. Of course, that has different inner meanings, that their love was so tight that Mahaprabhu could not bear the separation from Jagannanda Pandit. That's another level. But Sanatana Goswami himself, he was moving everywhere in Brajmandal. So the idea is that one who has this quality of anyabhilashita sunyam, or anyabhilashita, it is his nature, it is his svabhav that never ask Krishna for anything, never take anything from Krishna. But occasionally, at least the neophyte devotee, he may, in some circumstance, an occasional desire may come up, an anya avilash. But in the case of Madhavendra Puri, when he's sitting at Govinda Kund chanting, he's not thinking, "I have to eat, I have to drink. Oh Krishna, please send me some milk or food." He was absorbed. And then Gopal came from Anyur and said, "Oh, what are you doing, Baba? You've been here for so many days. If you go on like this, you'll be dead. Please take some milk." Because on that level, there's complete anyabhilashita is the same. The tendency to serve Krishna is there, and there's no other tendency, no other inclination or abhilash to ask for food or ask for some arrangement or ask for protection at the level of bhava and prema. But for the sadhaka, he may exhibit an anyabhilash, but still he's not disqualified from pure devotional service. This is the explanation of Jiva Goswami. But acharyas don't classify this as anya abhilash, other desire, because it is really not the swabhava or the nature of the devotee. It's only a reflex or an automatic response because of different situations of danger or suffering. The basic nature of the devotee is that he wants nothing for himself. He only wants the service of Krishna at all times and circumstances. The very nature of a devotee is not to have any desire mixed within him. So then it says here, example, I already mentioned walking in the forest, tiger. This is only an immediate response. It just happened. When we say reflex or automatic, it means that it's not contemplated. It's just like it just happens automatically. His actual moment to moment, the characteristic of a nanyabhilashita devotee, even a sadhak beginning devotee, his characteristic is he's always thinking of trying to serve. He's always trying and thinking of serving Krishna moment to moment. But maybe a reflex, or he gets an accident. Oh, Krishna, please protect me. And then after the accident's over, then he doesn't say, oh Krishna, please take away this pain. He doesn't, just as a reflex. It's not, you're about to get an accident, so Krishna, please help. It just automatically happens. But now he's in the hospital as a result of that accident. There's so much pain and suffering. But then he's not consciously premeditated way or consciously say, oh Krishna, I'm lying in this bed, I'm suffering, please remove my suffering. It's tatena kampam sushimikshamano. He accepts it and he tolerates and he goes on serving Krishna. You understand, there's this idea of automatic is just a reflex. That's why it's an occasional desire in a severe situation of suffering or danger to life. And now here is a very interesting explanation which Vishwanath is saying. In another place, I forget where exactly, but he's saying that this ta, because ultimately what Rupa Goswami, being Rupa Manjari, or Rupa Goswami, as he concludes the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu with description of Prema Bhakti, and especially points one in the direction of Madhurya Bhav, then to continue that idea, then he writes a whole other book called Ujjvala Nilamani, which is a full delineation on the science of loving Krishna and Madhurya Ras. And that's specifically to implement the Manobhishtam of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is to propagate Gopi Bhav or Manjari Bhav. So Vishwanath explains in one place that Anyabhilashita, the word ta and Anyabhilashita, indicates Manjari Bhav. So if someone is a Manjari means Dasi Bhav. Sometimes we say a Palya Dasi of Srimati Radharani. Palya means like Gopal, a protected maidservant, Palya Dasi. So that's, we say Dasi Bhav, because if you just say Manjari means Dasi, that Dasi means maidservant or handmaiden or servant. A queen has so many Dasis. Whenever a queen is married, then so many Dasis go with her. So many young girls, they go with her to serve the queen, comb her hair and massage her and do so many things, personal services. But we don't say that those girls are in Dasi Bhav. They're dasis, they're servants, female servants. But the Manjari is a female servant, but she has dasi bhav. She has the bhav, which means the nature. So the word ta in Anyabhilashi ta indicates the bhav, that bhav of pure service, which a Manjari possesses. She's the embodiment of pure service. So when we say dasi bhav, means dasi means a maidservant, and then when we say bhav means a maidservant with love. She's actually servant with love. We'll give an example. In the material world, someone may have so many servants. A rich man may have so many male or female servants in their house. But those servants are only serving the master to get money. They're not really thinking of the welfare of the master or thinking of the happiness of the master. They are doing what they have to do, just getting by to please the master and get their money. So it's explained that what are they actually thinking of? What are the servants thinking of? They're doing so much service, but they're actually thinking of money. And then they're thinking, yes, I'm doing this service, and at the end of the week I'll get $100. I'm going to spend it this way and that way. So when they're in the material world, we have so many dasis and dasas that are serving, but they're only thinking of the money that they'll get from the service. And what is their bhav? This is called arta bhav. The bhav, or the feeling, or the love for the art. Art means the object or the opulence. Their feeling is for the desired object. Their love is for the money. The servant, although he's working for the master and doing so many things for the master, she's actually thinking of herself. In other words, externally, the actions are being done for the master. The master says, do this, they do it. But their feelings and thinkings are for me. I'm thinking about the money I will get from this work, and I'm thinking about how I will enjoy this money. So the servant is only thinking of himself and his home and getting money to improve and decorate it. Even though the servant's working in the master's house, he's not thinking, oh, I should really do this nicely and make this, decorate this house. He's thinking, oh, I'm just doing this, and I'm getting this money, and I'll be using it for improving my house. But so now this is a dasi. They're doing service, but now what's a manjari? What's the difference between a dasi and a manjari? Because they say that this dasi has artha bhav, that her feeling is for the desired object. All of her feelings are for the desired object, which means money. And then she's thinking how she will use that for her pleasure and satisfaction. But a manjari, she is only absorbed in the master and serving the master. This is their only bhav, their sentiment or mood of love. So this word ta means the bhav. I talked about swabhav, your feeling, your sentiment. In other words, just like you can do so much service for Krishna and run around the temple and do so many things, what is your actual bhav? What is your actual mood? Is your mood to make Krishna's temple, this is to make Krishna's temple so clean and so nice? Or your mood is, your actual bhava is, I'm doing this so I get recognition. I'm doing this so I get my maintenance money to run my family. I'm going out and making these life members. So what is the bhava behind the action? Is it service, or is it devotional service? So this ta indicates that actual bhava, and in its utmost sense, the bhav of seva, the sobhav of being Krishna's servant and only thinking of Krishna's pleasure and happiness, is most perfectly embodied or exemplified in the form of the manjaris of Vrindavan. As some acharyas have described, every molecule or every cell of a manjari's body is made of service. There's no separate thinking or feeling, something for me or... So they are so Vishnu is saying that what Rupa Goswami is telling here, he's telling in the first verse, which actually begins the discussion of bhakti, after the Mangalacharan of Nectar Devotion, let's say Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In the first verse he's saying, yes, anyabhilashita sunyam. In the first word of the first verse, he's actually explaining what is the conclusion. The perfectional form of Krishna's servant is the manjari. So the very first word of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where the discussion begins, is anyabhilashita, is about gopi bhav, or specifically manjari bhav. But a manjari is only absorbed in the master and serving the master. This is their only bhav, sentiment or mood of love. Ta means bhav. For example, if a devotee gets sick, He desires to get well only for the purpose of serving Krishna. Because this is interesting. It's a very fine point. We may be sick, and when we're sick, usually we're suffering. Fever, soreness, indigestion, lack of energy, and we don't really feel happy. And this is all me considerations. My soreness, my happiness, my peace of mind, my pleasure. So then we say, oh Krishna, please help me get better. We're praying to get better, not so we can really do service, but just so we feel happy. So there's a fine point. If a devotee is sick and he desires to get well only to serve Krishna, and you can look, we examine yourself when you get sick. Is that the bhav? Is that the attitude? Is that the feeling? Oh Krishna, I'm sick. I can't do my service. I really want to serve you. Or is it Krishna, I'm sick. I feel lousy. Please, can you take this disease away? I want to feel good, because everyone wants to feel good. Everyone wants to feel happy. Does anyone want to suffer and serve Krishna? No, I want to serve Krishna as long as I feel good. In fact, as soon as I don't feel good, I stop serving Krishna. Isn't it? As soon as I get a sniffle or a cold, then forget it. Service finished. So my service is very conditional. As long as I'm happy and healthy, Krishna, you give me health and happiness, then I'll cooperate with you. I'll do some service. But does anyone ever pray, Krishna, make me sick, make me unhealthy? Krishna, make me sick, make me unhealthy. Fill my mind full of disturbance and fill my environment full of obstacles and hurdles. There are sometimes devotees that pray like that. There was one in the Bhagavatam known as Queen Kunti. And she's immortalized for all history, and she's the role model for all the sincere, extremely sincere devotees. They want to rise up to the platform of Anyabhilashita. And she is cited by the Acharyas in relation to this verse, that she was so much absorbed in Krishna's happiness that she was saying that, I find that when I'm suffering, my mind moves, is more absorbed and wrapped in your meditation, your service, than when I'm not suffering. Because when I'm not suffering, my consciousness tends to enter into my body. And I tend to derive some pleasure. My service is mixed with some pleasure that I'm deriving from my body or mind. So please submerge my body and mind in suffering, so then I won't have any opportunity to enjoy. I'll simply be thinking of you. Just as the Ganges flows continually to the sea without stop. If you send me suffering and difficulties, then my mind and heart will flow continually to your lotus feet without cessation. This is high degree of Krishna consciousness, pure bhakti. Example, I'm repeating. Example, a devotee is sick, he desires to get well only to serve Krishna. This suffix ta, anyabhilashi ta, indicates his bhav. His bhav is service. Bhav also means existence. Like we say, you know, that means material existence. So the very existence of a mandri is service. There's no other meaning. There's no other meaning to her existence. She only exists to serve Radharani and Krishna. A devotee's very existence is dasya. This is all that he desires, service and nothing else. Anyabhilashita. A mandri wants only the service of the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. With her mind, her words, her speech, her senses, every aspect and every particle of her being is pervaded with the desire to serve and please Srimati Radharani. An example is given. The essence of fire is heat. Fire is permeated with heat. Anywhere there's fire somewhere, from any direction, if you touch that fire or come near that fire, you will perceive the heat. So the word bhav, another meaning in Sanskrit of the word bhav, means permeated with it. So when we say dasi bhav, that a mandri possesses dasi bhav, means it permeates her very existence. So this suffix ta means actually permeating my mind. the core of my mind and my heart and my feelings and my actual identity is that I want to serve Krishna. Our desires may come and go, they may be there. And even sometimes I may have to act on them, as we heard. But still, a moment later, I'm back to my core of my existence. Like just like the fire is exhibiting heat, but you may put a pot over it, and the fire is burning in the pot. And if you put your, in the first few minutes, you put your hand on the clay pot, and it's cold, although there's fire inside. Then you take off the pot, and again you perceive the heat. So for a moment, due to danger or circumstance, an occasional desire may cover the anyavilashita nature of a devotee, sincere devotee. But then a second later, he's back to his actual swabhav of being fully absorbed and dedicated to Krishna's service, because he's actually permeated with it. And this is why what's so important is to change our consciousness and change the core of our being rather than just exhibit all kinds of externals. This word on anyavilashita, as we mentioned the other day, forces us to do a very deep self-analysis or psychoanalysis. What is my motivation? Because that word we mentioned, what is the actual motivation? What is the core of our existence that we're operating out of? Is it we really, really want to serve Krishna? We really want to please Him? Or is it just a show? Are we escapists? Are we found some way to escape the pressures or burdens of ordinary society? Are we really devotees or are we fake? This verse cuts us down to size very quickly. The word bhava means permeated with it. So dasya bhava means one's very existence is permeated with seva. There are no other coverings of karma or jnana. Anya bilashita shunyam. Jnana karmadi namrita. So even if there are extraneous desires that may occasionally come, one should only desire to please Krishna and execute pure devotional service. We must become completely free of this nature to not want to serve Krishna. The svabhava of pure bhakti is not to desire anything other than the desire, not to desire anything other than a desire to please Krishna. So this is the ta aspect. Indicates the svabhav. I really don't want anything else but to serve Krishna. And I don't want any other desire but the desire to serve Krishna. This type of conviction and transparent intention should manifest in the heart of a sincere devotee. Although occasionally some other avilash may come. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmadi ravritam. This is one point we were discussing. This is again discussing the Sarup Lakshana. Now we're discussing the Tatastha Lakshana, or the external characteristics of pure bhakti. But the internal, the main characteristics, or the internal intrinsic characteristics, srup, lakshana, is anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. So this is in relation to seeing anyabhilashita in terms of mandri bhav. So one can also see this phrase anukulyena krishnanu indicates, because it says following Krishna with a favorable, anukulya means a very favorable mind or favorable mood, and Krishna anu means following. So this phrase also means the service of Srimati Radharani. anukalyena krishnanu, because as I mentioned, anyabhilashita indicates mandri bhav. So that's indicating the sabhav of the mandri, anyabhilashita. So that's the external, you can say, mood, or part of the external definition of this verse. Now when you go to the bottom half, anukalyena krishnanu, which is the sarupa lakshana, then this also indicates mandri bhav, or the service of Radharani. Radharani is the beloved Priya, or the Parama Mahapriyatam. This is in Jiva Goswami's explanation. Parama Mahapriyatam. This is a verse, the way he describes it. Radharani is Parama Mahapriyatam. Priyatam means most dear, Priya Uttam. And he say Mahapriyatam, then Parama Mahapriyatam. She is supremely Maha, the most beloved of Krishna. So if we want to serve Krishna, then we must know his heart. Because anukulya means favorable. So if you want to serve me favorably, then you must really know me. If someone says, oh, I want to cook for you, and then I'll cook something for you, and I'll make some prasad. So if you want to favorably cook for me, you're cooking for me, okay, and I'm eating some prasad, and I'm maintaining myself, and it's nicely cooked. But is it favorable? Is it really, and how will you know if it's favorable? Well, you have to really know what the person likes to eat and cook exactly that object or that food with love and devotion expertly done. Then the person, you will get the favor of the person. So you really, in order to really serve Krishna favorably, or anyone for that matter, you really have to know the heart of the person. So who knows the heart more than Srimati Radharani? If you want to serve or please someone, then you must be able to read the person's mind. You see that Prabhupada was so much appreciating the service of Shruti Kirti Das. Because Shruti Kirti, one thing is to do you're asked to do the service, and you do the service on time and enthusiastically. But another thing is to be so much tadatmika, or one with the master, that you know the needs of the master before the master says anything. You already anticipate, oh, this should be done, that should be done. And you can only know that if your consciousness, if your mind and your thinking is absorbed in their heart. In other words, your identity becomes merged in their identity. Like they often say, no one can understand the pains and pleasures of another person, whether I have a headache or a backache. How do you know? You can't tell. You're living in your body and I'm living my body. At least your consciousness is existing in your body, so you're therefore aware of your body. But your consciousness is not existing in my body, so you're not aware of my body. But for an expert servant, his consciousness exists in the body of his master. His very heart enters into the heart of the master, and his very mind. As the master thinks, he thinks. As the master feels, he feels. And you see that when you read Govinda Lilamrita and Krishna Bhavanamrita, that the mandris are so much tadatmika with Radharani. Whatever she feels, they feel. If a mandri is in Vrindavan and she's making arrangements for the evening rasa dance there, and she's sweeping the rasmandala and she's picking off the small stones and she's bringing in maybe finer sand to make it very comfortable to dance on, and then Radharani is in Varsana visiting her mother, and somehow Radharani gets some bad news from one of her sakis, one of her messengers, say maybe Rati Mandri. She says, oh, you know, you were supposed to go out and meet Krishna, but Krishna, I just saw Krishna went with Padma and Shaibya. They've taken Krishna to meet that other one. They don't even say the name. And some other one. And then the way that phrase in Sanskrit, some other, it means some other, but it also means a really lousy one. You know, the Sanskrit word, it just doesn't mean some, like you're a gopi and some other gopi, but it means some other gopi, but a really inferior one. You know, the language is like this. So when Radharani hears that news, she may start whimpering, she may start crying, and her heart just snaps, and, oh, how could he do this? And so now, 40 miles away, and and Sevakunj and the Rasa Mandal, Samandri is sent there by Vrindadevi and doing some sweeping. As soon as Radharani's heart cracks in Barsana, she starts crying, the Mandri drops her jaru. She drops her broom. She collapses on the ground, starts crying, holds her heart. Oh, like this, because she's feeling the pain that Radharani's feeling. This is Mandri Bhav. This is Seva Bhav, Seva Dasi. So this is the utmost expression of Tadatmika, being living in the heart of another. Even in this world, the servant can be so much like that with the master, as Prabhupada would often comment about Shruti Kirti, that he knows my mind, he knows my heart. You must have heard this phrase. Oh, my wife knows my mind. Usually it's wife and husbands because they're so close. Oh, my wife really knows my mind or knows my heart. So this is this anokalyena, favorable. If you're living in someone's heart and mind, then you can really render favorable service. In other words, we must serve someone best. If you want to serve and please someone, you must be able to read the person's mind. So this is how Radharani, she serves Krishna so nicely, because Krishna communicates so many things to her, either in so many subtle ways, by indirect communication, even by his feelings or thoughts, or by looks or glances, or let's say even in this world. An expert servant can read these signs clearly, and he reacts and serves accordingly. So if ordinary souls in a relationship with master and servant can be so expert in serving, just imagine how expert Radharani is in serving Krishna. As Prabhupada used to make, when he had his different servants, he would be in his room and he would make different, he would just glance in a certain way. You can hear Shruti Kirti tells. He said, I came after serving Prabhupada for some time, I would know if he would be speaking, he would raise his eyebrow in a certain way. That meant that we should clear these people out of the room, that Prabhupada wanted to take rest. I mean, there would be some Indians visiting him and having some darshan. And so Prabhupada just move his eyebrow, and then Shruti Kirti would know that this movement of the eye, because he was so much like watching Prabhupada from the back of the room and letting him conduct his meeting, that this meant that. Then Shruti Kirti would say, So it's very nice everyone's come to visit Swamiji, but Swamiji has a very hectic schedule. Tomorrow he has to fly to Paris, and he's a little tired, if you don't mind. And so everyone thinks that, no one understands that Prabhupada is orchestrating the whole thing. And they just think, oh, the servant is so much careful about his master, and I guess we better respect Swamiji. And then Swamiji would say, oh, please don't mind my servant, he's like this, you know, he's so much caring for me, like my mother, you know. And they had this whole, and then people say, okay, Swamiji, and like this. So that's here in this world, that the guru and the servant can be so much like this. So what to speak of Radharani and her service to Krishna? So Radharani, she alone, as she herself reveals in Adi Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and also in Bhagavatam, where she reveals, no one else can please Krishna like me. She knows it. She has some pride because she knows that no one can please. She says in her own words. So Radharani alone knows the heart of Krishna. She fully understands Krishna's heart completely. Radharani is the most intelligent, she's more intelligent than Krishna. Radhika is a personification of Seva Bhav. Therefore, if a devotee wants, devotees in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, they want to assist this person. And we want to assist Radharani. Like people say, oh, you're supposed to be Krishna conscious and serve Krishna. The goal of life is to serve Krishna. But to serve someone, as I already mentioned in the last 15 minutes, you have to really know their heart and really know their mind. And how can I know the mind of God or heart of God? I'm a little tiny jiva. I don't even know what's going on in my back behind my head, what to speak. I can't tell you what's going on my back, and maybe some bug landing there biting me. I can't even see that. I don't have any consciousness or awareness of that. So how am I supposed to have consciousness or awareness of God? So therefore, let me serve or try to serve this person who is such an expert servant of Krishna. And in that way, I'll be recognized by Krishna. Oh, you're helping her. And in this way, I can serve not only Radharani, but serve Krishna at the same time. So Mandri thinks, I want to assist this person. I want to if I can help this person because she's so expert. Just for example, if you can't sing, you don't know how to sing in kirtan or anything. But then there's some devotee that's really, really good singer. So then you can think, oh, please, you come and let me carry the mridang, let me carry your harmonium, let me help, let me assist. And then maybe and I must give him a massage or something. His arms are tired. Let me massage you because you're going to be tired, and massage your arms so you can play nice mridanga for the pleasure of Krishna or whatever. So how much, if you go and play the mridanga off beat and with the improper raga, then maybe you can play, but it's not very pleasurable. Better you become an assistant. So the mandris think, if I can help Radharani, then by this I can render favorable service to Krishna. So anukalyena Krishnanu. Krishnanu means, actually, let me come in the line of the pure servants. Anu means anugatya. Anugatya. Krishna anugatya. Krishna anu means let me fall in line. Let me come in line of the servants of the servants of the servants. Gopi bartu palakamalyor dasa dasanu dasa. Or in this case, dasi, dasi, dasi anudasi. And serve that servant who's serving that servant who's serving the best servant of Krishna, who is Srimati Radharani. And this is how you can do the most favorable service to Krishna, which is anukulya, anukulyena Krishnanu, favorable to Krishna. Who can be more favorable than Radharani? So if I help her and assist her, then that's the perfection of my service. This is the best way I can render favorable service to Krishna. Krishna tells Arjuna, I accept anyone who serves my devotees, because Krishna says in Adi Purana that those who say they're my devotees, I do not accept them as my devotees. But those who are devotees of my devotees, I accept. So Gaudiya Vaishnavas aspire only for the seva of Srimati Radharani. The mandris have the bhav, or the anyabhilashita, of a servant. The mandris desire, I want to be the maid servant of Srimati Radharani. If we can attain this goal, the service of Radharani, then all other desires will be fulfilled. Anyabhilashita. So this word ta means a class of desire or the tendency. So the only class of desire or tendency we want to have, or at least we're striving to have, is become a pure servant of Srimati Radharani. All other desires will be fulfilled. Anyabhilashita. You may ask a question. How to attain this position of becoming a maidservant of Srimati Radharani? In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami says that we should loudly chant in a beautiful voice, Nam Sankirtan, the glories of Srimati Radharani in Vrindavan, and chant the names of Krishna and Braj. What he's saying is, it's called Supriya Nam. He said we should glorify Radha and Krishna Yugal and all the different names and bhajans that describe Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari, and so many others. Repeat the descriptions of Krishna's form and beauty or his pastimes in Vrindavan. That is the sadhana to become a maidservant of Srimati Radharani in Mandri Bhav. Because he actually discusses this in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that the sadhana is Nam Sankirtan. But what Nam Sankirtan? Prem Nam Sankirtan. With the sankalpa that I want to be your servant, Srimati Radharani, then I engage in Prem Nam Sankirtan. Either best, of course, is Leela Kirtan, where you're specifically singing kirtans which glorify Radha and Krishna's prem-filled leelas in Vrindavan, which Bhaktivinoda has so many, and Narottam and others. That is the sadhana, Sanatana Goswami says, to become a maid servant of Srimati Radharani in Mandri Bhav. At least that will cultivate and create the bhav. And when the bhav is there, then the form will come. And the form, because when the bhav comes, then Krishna arranges you to receive the form from Guru or from Shudanam or from the Seva itself, as I mentioned. So what we can do is try to cultivate our bhav, our Seva bhav, our Mandri bhav. Along these lines, as Sanatana Goswami explains, that is a sadhana to become a maidservant of Srimati Radharani and Mandri bhav. The key is that we must chant with love and full of feeling. That's what he says in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So we'll stop there. Question?
I just want to ask you if you can kindly again translate it hard. Is it in connection to Shunyam actually, or is it in connection with?
It's connection with Abhilash.
So the Shunyam is not.
The Shunya means to be free from any other desires. Anya means other, Abhilash means desire, and Shunya means to be free from any other desire, except Ta. Ta means the tendency, and Ta means the actual Sobhav. So if you take the Ta off, then it says Anya Abhilash Shunyam, to be free from any other desire.
So that is Tatastha Lakshana, what shouldn't be done, right?
Yeah. It's called the Tatastha Lakshana.
But Ta is Swarupa Lakshana.
Ta, well, the Acharyas are saying this is part of the Tatastha Lakshana, but the Ta is refining, because the Swarupa Lakshana is simply serving Krishna. Mm. So that's, you can say that's the perfected platform. Bhakti will always be this. Because in level of bhava, in level of prem, these other two lines are out. There's no consideration of anyabhilashita shunyam or anyabhilash shunyam, jnana karmadhyan anavritam at the level of bhava and prem. They're just, they're not there. So, but what is there is anukalyena krishnanam and uttam bhakti. But at the level of sadhaka, then it's tatastha lakshana we have to consider. So even then, he wants to. Because that's why they say, because sometimes acharyas say if he didn't put the ta there, then you would just say, well, it means free from all desire. So that means that we should be desireless. So that sounds like Mayavadi philosophy or Buddhist. So when you say ta, it means you should be free from all their desire except the ta, the sobhav of desire. The quality of desire should, your quality of your desire should be in the core of your heart, the one desire to serve Krishna. That, because we're talking about desire. This whole line is about desire. So don't be devoid of all desire, but change the very core and cultivate this. My only desire, the ta, the tendency, the desireness, is that I only desire to serve Krishna. That was what you mentioned in one of our lines. But not that all these other desires. Although occasionally one of those other desires may come. So therefore, that is something for the sadhaka, which is to work on. But at the level of bhava and prema, which this uttam bhakti definition also carries on, that ta is all he is. That his swabhav is only one desire, to serve Krishna favorably with loving sentiments at the level of bhava and prema.
So does it mean that anya bilash means other desires? So not all the desires, but just other from ta?
Other material desires. Ta means a tendency. So we could, the tendency to desire something other than Krishna, that we have to get free from. Even though the sadhaka may have, as I mentioned, he may have some other desires. But the ta, his very nature, his swabhav, is that my only desire is I want to serve Krishna. Although I'm carrying, and these other desires may come up, as I said, due to some suffering or some, as a reflex, reflex action, because we're sadhakas, we still have attachment to our body, and the desire to evacuate, the desire to eat, the desire to preserve or protect our body. They're not there. Those desires aren't there at the level of bhava and prema.
Then when we say shunyam, it's about abhilash, right?
It's about abhilash.
Not about kha. So should be anya abhilash shunyam, but kha is not shunyam. Kha should remain.
No, ta is that's the person. Swabhav, ta is swa means you, your own bhav. So ta represents your swabhav as an individual, as a person. So that's not shunya.
Spiritual, original desire, right?
That's yes. That should be our, whether it's original or not. But that's maybe acquired. But desireness. It means the tendency to desire. Ta. You can't say that it's a suffix, so you can't say that ta has ta when the intention as Rupa Goswami, the meaning that Rupa Goswami is giving to this suffix is revealed by Jiva Goswami's commentary. Otherwise, ta is a Sanskrit suffix. You can't say that ta means the spiritual desire, but the word ta means tendency, the tendency to something. So when the ta is put on Abhilash, it's the tendency of desire. I mean, you're saying ta means ta has to be in relation to something. The sabab of abhilash, or the sabab of something else, or the tendency, like we say smarta, right? Smarta. So the tendency to follow the smritis, or the sabab to be attached to the smritis and the rules and regulations. So he's a smarta. You've heard this term, maybe smarta brahman. So the ta is this has is a qualifier. That's what suffix is. It's a qualifier, as far as I recall. So anyabilash, without that, then you don't get the proper definition, because you, as I said, so many people are carrying on in bhakti with anya abhilash. Why are you just doing bhakti? But the core, they haven't actually addressed, they haven't examined the core of their heart and to the matching the core of their heart to this definition of uttam bhakti. So the whole time they're carrying on for 25 years, they've never been practicing uttam bhakti. So therefore, they never came to the platform, went from to the platform of bhav. Because the whole point, sadhana bhakti is supposed to be practiced with the mood of bhav, so it comes to the level of bhava bhakti. So bhav is the internal situation. So ta represents the internal situation. The swabhav means your nature, your internal situation. The mind and senses are external to you. You are the atma. But if your very atma is just covered by desires to enjoy material energy, then your sabhav is a total, is not bhakti, bhakti sabhav. So that's why chanting and serving and surrendering to Guru is supposed to change our consciousness, change our sabhav. So we have to see what am I operating out of? What is my frame of reference? Is it really for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna? And practically speaking, most people are not practicing uttam bhakti as sadhakas, so they don't get very far. They're just carrying. It's like Prabhupada said, you have the anchor, the engine's running, but the anchor, the boat's at the harbor, and the anchor's inside the bottom of the harbor, and the boat's not going anywhere. You have to pull up the anchor, then you can make progress. So right from, this is the first verse in the discussion of bhakti. This is bhakti rasamrita sindhu. Well, this we haven't even entered. Sindhu means ocean. Ultimately, you will swim in an ocean of bliss, blissful loving service, bhakti ras. But first of all, we have to approach the ocean. We have to go towards the ocean. We have to cross the beach, and we have to park the car and walk across the sand. So we better understand what is this ocean that I'm approaching very clearly. Anyabhilashita. Yeah, I think she had her hand up first. Yeah.
Thank you very much for this class, because it's really pinpointing on what I've been going through. I keep thinking of your Bhagavad Gita verse where it says that one must act according to one's own nature, and what does repression accomplish? So, in terms of what we've spoken about today, whenever I think about, now what can I do to please Krishna, I always find that when I think, well, I can do this, I'm always saying, well, there's my material nature there. You know, it's just natural. It's my material nature there. I've got this quality, I've got this ability. So I'm wanting, I naturally think that way as to how can I serve Krishna for his pleasure. How does this fit in with this whole definition of
Well, the whole idea, I mean, just like you said, It's the attitude, the desire. What you're saying is, I want to serve Krishna and please Krishna. Of course, the role of the guru is crucial, because at the level of bhav, then the bhav, we actually have a way of if the feelings of love will actually guide the expression of that love. So the love will be expressed in various forms of service. And they'll all be perfect, because bhava bhakti itself is actually Krishna, directly. So the level of bhava bhakti, like they say like this, that Krishna has his own, he has his own love within him, ladini shakti. So when he wants to relish that love, he puts it into someone else. He gives it to someone else, and then he relishes the taste of that. When they lovingly serve him, he relishes it. But he gave them the love which they are offering back to him. That's what the swarup shakti, Krishna wants to relish his love, but in order to relish his love, he has to give it to someone, and then when they offer loving service, then he relishes the service. So love is within him, and then he brings it out of him, the Ladini, and makes a form of Radharani. And she's full of love, and then she expresses that love which she received from him in one sense. And then he relishes the taste, because he can't taste it when it's inside himself. This is how it's described. Just like the ocean. The ocean is full of water. And the ocean gives up its water. It gives up its water to the clouds. The clouds release the water in the mountains. Then the mountains, the rivers flow down the mountains and they go back to the ocean. And the ocean receives water again. And it becomes fuller, it becomes cleansed, or it looks very beautiful, all the rivers entering to the ocean. It increases the beauty and the water in the ocean. But the ocean is the source of the water. So Krishna is actually the source of love. But then he's a rasika. He's called his rasika shekara. He relishes a ras, but no one can actually offer him ras unless they receive it from him. It's almost like a rich man. He has so much money, but he wants to get some gifts. So he says, "Here's $1 million. Go buy me some gifts." So then you take his money and buy a bunch of gifts and say, "Here's, oh, you got this for me. Oh, that's nice. That's such a nice watch. And you bought this for me," and it's only his money. Expressed in the form of these gifts, but he's relishing it because he didn't have the idea to buy this gift and that gift. But you were thinking, oh, how could I? What gift could I get him? Or what? Oh, I see. Wonder if he's a rich man, but I wonder if he has an electric ear cleaner. You know, because the Japanese I just saw this electric ear cleaner. So then you take the money he gave you and you buy him that. And he says, oh, I never had one of these. Let me try it. Whatever, it's just something. So the idea is that Krishna, he wants to taste his love. He's Rasaraj, Mahabhava. So then he gives his love to everyone, and then he relishes it when they express it back to him. This is how the acharyas describe how this works. Because we want Krishna wants our love, but he has to give it to us. We have to qualify. He wants to relish love. That's all. He has everything else. What do you give the man that has everything? They say, there's a phrase like that in America. What can you give the man who has everything, or the woman, or for whatever? So that you can give them your love. So the Krishna is only seeking that. That he's created all these living entities, and he says, now, give me something. So what? Well, give love. Well, we don't have any. Well, you have to get it from me. Well, how do we get it? Well, you have to surrender to Guru. Then you surrender to Guru, then finally we receive the love, and then we get it. He gives us the love, because it comes down. It's not with us. It's transcendental. It's part of Him. So when we receive the love, oh, I have it. Well, what do I do with it now? I have all this love. Well, what do I do with it? Oh, it's your love. And okay, well, let me express it this way, and that way, and this way, and that way. So love dictates its own expression. But at the level of sadhaka, that we have to be monitored by Guru. So, and generally, a guru will take whatever you have in your hand, which is also given by Krishna in one sense, although indirectly by the Paramatma. He's rewarding us and punishing us according to our own actions. But you have so many talents and abilities, and everything, as I said in the previous class, everything can be bhakti. Sleeping is bhakti, cooking is bhakti, working, typing, anything. Everything is bhakti. When the consciousness is there, Krishna, you've given me all this money. Now I'm going to buy all these gifts and offer them, and I'm not going to buy one gift for myself. You gave me $1 million, I'm going to buy $1 million worth of gifts and lay them at your feet. Now enjoy, have a good time. Now I'm going to sit back and watch you enjoy. And when I see you're enjoying, that when you open that gift and take off the gift wrapping and you look at that box and you smile, that's my smile, that's my pleasure. That's all I want, to see your smile. If you're happy by giving me distress, that distress is my greatest source of happiness. This is Radharani's purport on this verse. Radharani speaks a verse through the mouth of Mahaprabhu, who's in Radhabhav. He speaks a verse in Gambira, and then she gives a purport on this verse. And one of those verses in Anti Lila, she says, Krishna, even if you give me happiness, if my distress gives you happiness, then my distress becomes the greatest source of my happiness. If you find happiness in breaking my heart, and hurting me and cracking me on the head, if that makes you smile, if you take a hammer and hit me on the head and that makes you happy, well, hit me 100 times. Because that pain and suffering, who can think like this? Who can understand the heart of Radharani? So it's really, you can, whatever, you feel like, Krishna, you've given me these abilities, or I've given them, or I've received them, or I have them. Somehow or other, I have all these talents and abilities. Now my anyabhilashita is, I don't want to use or exploit any of these talents or abilities for my own pleasure in any form or way. But I have them, and they belong to you. They, you're given to me by you. So I want to use them for your pleasure. I want to type or write or paint. I know how to paint. So I'm going to paint paintings for you. And I'm going to make beautiful paintings. And guess what? I'm not going to sign them. I'm not going to put my signature on them. I'm going to give them away. Or if someone likes them, I'll say, look, you know, can you give me the money for the cost of paint and canvas? And I had to eat something, so, you know, it took me 5 days to paint it. So 5 days food is 50 rupees and the canvas is 50 rupees. Here's a painting, it costs 200 rupees. So you're pleasing Krishna and not taking anything for yourself, but just the basics, what you need. But nowadays someone makes a painting in 2 weeks and they sell it for a lakh. These Russian artists are making a fortune and they're living luxuriously. But they have to live, but it's like a job. It's not exactly pure, it's not pure devotional service. You're painting, you paint something for a week and you charge 50,000 rupees. Because art has no price. But the basic, really what I can understand from this definition is that everything goes, practically speaking, if the conscious, some things of course are not permitted because they're immoral or they're illegal by, you know, Vedic definition. So it's not that Krishna is inducing immorality or illegality, but there's so many ways to express this pure consciousness, so many ways to serve Krishna, unlimited ways. So I think it's really, once you adjust your consciousness, so that as a Bhava Bhakta or Prema Bhakta, that consciousness is automatically adjusted by Krishna directly and personally, because that's the Bhav does it. Everything is perfect on that level. But the level of sadhakas, if our sincerity and connection with the super soul, who is also guru, we can adjust our activities and practice pure devotion and express pure devotion in so many ways. But if we're not so connected with the super soul or chaitya guru, then we need to get modulated or monitored by Sri Guru. Guru mukha padma vakya chitta te koriya aikya. Right? My chitta, which we discuss, what is chitta? My chitta, all my impressions, samskaras and vasanas, they must become aikya, they must become one with Guru Vakya. Guru Vakya, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya, chitta. And it's not, his Vakya is not ordinary Vakya. His Vakya is coming from a lotus flower. His mouth, his words are like a lotus flower. They're attractive, they're colorful, they're beautiful, and they're sweet. And they're relishable and they're full of makarande. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya. Mukha Padma means lotus mouth. It doesn't mean he has a big mouth. But it means that if I receive those words from Guru Mukha, and then I accept those words in my chitta, then my chitta will become very, very beautiful. My chitta will become very, very attractive. My chitta will become very, very fragrant. And my chitta will become full of nectar. Guru Mukha, if I can make my chitta, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitta Te Koriya Aikya. Koriya means to do. I have to do, I have to work at it. I have to work at making my chitta one with these instructions. So Guru means Chaitya Guru, Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru. And Guru Parampara, these are all Gurus. Vartman Pradarshi Guru is also there. Tomorrow's another day. I mean, the class is